What's going on, everyone? I hope you're having a fabulous day out there. For those of you guys that do know me, my name is Jameson Sharp, and this is
Sean Liebig.
And you're listening and watching the Jiu-Jitsu Takedown Podcast. So, I have a guest today. He is not only one of my best friends in Jiu-Jitsu, but he's an instructor of mine. He's a brown belt, a Gracie brown belt. And the guy is incredible, not only in competition, but what he teaches on the mat. I mean, literally, when I first came back to Jiu-Jitsu, he was my first contact. So it's kind of special for me to sit down and actually get his story. And what we're going to talk about today is really interesting as well. So I appreciate you guys out there that do show us support, that chime in, comment, like, and share, because you know I need y'all. So anyways, this is Sean Liebig, right?
Yeah,
I got your name. I always screw his name on.
One of those difficult German names.
Yeah, right. And you know, a very interesting topic we have today, because there's been a lot of arguments out there online about this topic, and that is, what's better, judo or Brazilian jiu-jitsu, or jiu-jitsu? So, you know, that's kind of the argument out there. There's a lot of trolls out there and all that good stuff, so what do you think?
That's interesting. I was unaware there was a controversy or a debate as to what's better.
Yeah, I think it's mostly people who don't know what they're doing, chiming in on, you know, trying to talk about something they know nothing about. Problem, you know, people in armchair martial arts out there is what I like to call them.
Okay.
And you know, there is an argument, you know, about what is better, judo or versus jiu-jitsu. And I will say this from my own experience, you're both great. I do them both. And we do them both here, right?
Right. Sundays, Mark Lozano, black belt.
Exactly. Yeah, we got a black belt that teaches us on Sundays judo. And you guys that follow me on Instagram and Facebook, whatever, you know, I always put a, you know, judo Sunday class picture up. So that's really interesting. I love judo. Even when I went to a seminar with Hoyce Gracie, a kid I was training with named Joel, he's out of Team Bahi in Omaha. Well, very simply, he was like, your judo's amazing. And I was like, it is, you know? And he's been doing judo for years, so that was a real compliment. Thanks, Joel. So anyways, tell us a little bit about the history of jiu-jitsu versus judo, or just the history of judo.
Well, first, my judo was not great. I'm definitely a white belt in judo, to
make
that clear. As far as, not to dive too deep into the history, we can spend an hour plus talking about the history of how judo derived from traditional jiu-jitsu, how it came to Brazil, and how it eventually evolved into what we see now as modern Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The only thing I'd like to say is, first, when they talk about what's better, I mean, essentially, to me, they're cousins. They both
right.
come from the same family. I would say that there's not a huge difference between the philosophy of judo and Jiu-Jitsu. Both, and if you go back and look at the founder, the creator of modern judo, Kano, I believe I'm saying or pronouncing that right, a small, weaker person being able to overcome a much bigger, stronger person. That was the original philosophy, and that was brought to the Gracie family, other Brazilians, back almost 100 years ago, right? I'm getting close to that. So I would just say that today, if you want to find a difference between the two, I would just say that modern judo would emphasize getting the fight to the ground,
right?
And then pinning that opponent to the ground. And of course, judo also, depending on the competition format, will feature chokes, joint locks. So there is some ground aspect to judo. But for the most part, when it comes to, I believe, from the Olympic standpoint, it's really the main point. The focus, the points, the advantages is basically trying to get that fight to the ground and pin that person to the ground. Whereas jiu-jitsu's focus, again, we feature takedowns,
right?
But the primary focus, the advantage, the point system is based on positional dominance, transitions, sweeps, and just essentially being able to improve your position to get to a joint lock or a type of choke. So really, like I said, when you say there is a debate, I think you should do both.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And not just that, you know, we talk about martial arts in general. I think it's important to learn a little bit of everything. Even with our academy, we're Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but we'll have aspects of wrestling, aspects of boxing, kickboxing. We're not an MMA gym. We don't put that much focus into it. We're not training professional cage fighters. That's a different level, but I think it's important for everybody, if you're starting from a self-defense perspective, to be prepared for every possible scenario.
Sure.
And quite honestly, when you talk about judo versus, you know, or with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the curriculum that we use, from white belt to blue belt, even aspects from blue to purple, are essentially traditional Japanese Jiu-Jitsu. We're talking about standing techniques, wrist locks, traditional takedowns. So a lot of it, though, is just modified for maximum efficiency.
Sure.
It'll take out what is not useful, what is, you know, what we consider to be a little bit inefficient or impractical, and really focus on what is practical. So
yeah, I know we can spend a long time talking about, you know, the different techniques and the different, you know, curriculum of judo and jiu-jitsu, which is fascinating. And that's one of the reasons we make this podcast. But another aspect, just an interesting, entertaining aspect to this history of judo as well, right? Like, I think the story goes, and correct me if I'm wrong, back in the day, I think this is over 100 years ago, when the Japanese government looked at the people in the Kodokan who were practicing jiu-jitsu, and they were teaching people, and the government stepped in and says, we don't want you to teach people anymore. What does that mean?
That's, again, it's easy. That's obviously Googleable, right? You can go online and do Wikipedia, and you can get the exact history. I want to say that the transition from jiu-jitsu, which was a battle art, featured a lot of weapons, is more of the samurai art. They eventually, for citizens, when wartime was over, from my understanding, I'm sure there's a lot of different historical perspectives,
sure,
tellings of this, but from what I've been told, and from, you know, just from memory right now, essentially just made it more into a sport aspect, more instead of an aggressive combat military style art, they made it more of a self-defense.
Right.
That was the idea behind it. When Kano made that, you know, transferred from, say, the term jiu-jitsu to judo. So
the government made them water it down to judo. Is that kind of
how? Yeah, see, that, and that's the part I'm not really
familiar
with. I don't want to say that it's been watered down. I think it was just modified. It was changed to essentially, you know, make the art more of a sport to, you know, produce competition. Because I think one of the main parts with, if I remember right, he wanted to get away from katas, get more into randori,
right,
so to make it more of a dynamic, sure, more realistic form. And the best way to do that is through competition, through, you know, live sparring. And so they, I think, with a lot of these traditional martial arts, they want to make it to where other people can train without becoming severely injured.
Right, yeah, you want to keep things safe.
Right, so I think that's the reason why judo was changed to what it was, because it took out a lot of the strikes, took a lot of the weapons, it took out a lot of other, what you consider dangerous, eye gouging, other techniques that you really can't perform live with a training partner.
Right.
So, and really, I don't know, it's a matter of opinion, but I don't think those are necessarily that important. I don't think it's important to eye gouge. So I mean, I'll just tell you this, if you're looking at judo from a self-defense perspective, I mean, you judo throw somebody on the concrete.
Oh yeah,
the fight's over.
That's right? It. You knock them out usually.
I don't recommend it. You might have to answer to the, you know, to the authorities on that. But I would recommend slamming somebody on the concrete. But the point is, that is a fight ender.
Yeah. So, I will say this. Usually, we were, you know, I watched a special forces guy and a Filipino guy go after it one day in the field. And I believe there's a video out there of it. But the United States Special Forces guy is a martial arts expert. He is. He's a black belt and something. Anyways, I know he was trained in this discipline called SCARS. Same thing we were, my background in the United States Navy and Marine Corps. We were trained in SCARS as well and MINGMAP. But anyway, he took on this Filipino fighter, army fight, and he ended the fight in less than a second with an eye gouge.
Really?
That was quick, because I guess the Filipino was talking about your discipline will probably not work, whatever. Anyway, it's a big argument out there, but within like a second, the dude just poked him in the eye and took his eye out, and he was on the ground. It was all over.
That's like,
wow, I have to dig that. Y'all go out there and search for it on YouTube. Yeah. It's out there.
Again, as a civilian, you probably don't want to go that round.
No, you don't want to go that
There's some legal issues there, but
you get slammed out here on the pavement from judo or jiu-jitsu from a takedown. Usually that's a game ender. Look at some of the mixed martial arts guys out there that have been, you know, like in hotels or gas stations and stopped robberies and did a takedown. A lot of those, you know, guys who are in the wrong, they get knocked out cold quick. So yeah, it's dangerous. As dangerous as it is.
No, it is. Anytime you try and get into any kind of confrontation on the street, it's really dangerous. I think one of the misconceptions, though, when you talk about people that maybe have online arguments, whatever, that may be a little bit inexperienced. I think anybody that's trained any martial art for a long time, at least one that where you're doing a lot of live sparring, where it is hard training, you develop a different mindset. Instead of thinking that, hey, I'm gonna be able to handle somebody that for whatever reason, whether it be a road rage incident, whether it be, you know, somebody hitting on your girlfriend, that's a classic thing you'll hear. Well, I think one thing that training does is it actually helps you to avoid those situations altogether.
That's the best medicine, really, in real life. If you can avoid a confrontation fight, by all means, do it. Because it's not worth the financial and legal issues
you get into,
or the social issues that could happen later. Like our sensei, Michael Graber, he says, you don't know. You don't know if the guy's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You don't know if he's going to come back and kill you with a gun.
Right, exactly. And that's key. I mean, I know a lot of people will come into a martial art, you know, saying, well, I want to be able to protect my family. And that's the key, too, is when we do, because we're a combination academy, we'll obviously, you know, we have the competition side, which is important, and we can dive into that for other times. But also, we teach the street tactics, but it's not so much to get into fights, right? It's a situation where, you know, if you are attacked, you know, if you're, you know, obviously whether you're coming to the aid of somebody else who's being attacked, or maybe you're a female, you're a, you know, a teenager, younger, and maybe an abduction scenario, an assault scenario, you want to be in a situation, you want to have the skill to be able to get away.
Yeah.
So, for example, we talked about judo. If you don't have the opportunity to throw somebody, right, if you're just that next thing you know, you wind up on the ground, you have to be in a situation where
you know
how to get away. You know how to get up. You know how to finish the fight there. Get on top. Get up. Get away. Call the authorities, whatever the case may be, or finish the fight.
Right.
You know, you can vary the intensity, depending on the danger, depending on the threat, you can be as severe as you need to be with that aggression.
Dial it up or dial it down.
Right. So we tend to focus more, whereas, say, an MMA gym is,
for obvious reasons,
right. It's for complicated. It's face to face. You know, you have to deal with situations where you're, you know, somebody's sneaking up behind you, so you're just caught from out of nowhere. Or again, maybe as an adult, maybe you're a tough guy, right? So you're not worried about anybody attacking you on the street, but you may have a wife, a girlfriend, a child, right? So you want to make sure that they're equipped to handle those situations. And also, too, by training, you develop what I call a sensitivity, a level of awareness to where, you know, that, you know, people jokingly call spidey sense, where you stand up and you feel situations happening.
Oh yeah.
And so if anything, what will more likely happen when you train martial arts is these situations will happen because you sense them coming way before they happen. And another thing is you're going to avoid certain situations. You're going to see things happening, you know, so unless you're in security, say you're a bouncer, you're a door person, you're in public safety, whether you're law enforcement, military, you know, it's going to be very rare, you know, unless you're in those situations where you're going to have those confrontations. But even if you're in those public safety positions or security, you can't just beat the hell out of somebody.
No.
You have to be able to neutralize the situation. You don't want to hurt somebody, you know, somebody's drunk or somebody's, you know, whatever the case may be. But the idea isn't to destroy that person.
Applications of judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu and jiu-jitsu all are related.
Exactly.
And those who are out there arguing what's better than the other, let me just tell you this from my own opinion. They're all cousins. They're all family members. You know what? Without the training I have, we have here at the academy, none of this would exist. So we owe a lot to the,
what's better? Whatever you love. Do you love boxing? Do you love traditional martial arts? It doesn't matter. Train what you love to train.
Sure.
That's all it comes down to.
True.
Right? So train what you love to train and learn how to find an avenue for aggression, for anger. Because a lot of times, like I said, what is, you know, one of the famous sayings, what Henner would say is, you know, why do fights happen? Ego and alcohol.
Exactly.
Right? So yeah. So have a place to train hard, good training partners, let out that aggression, let out that stress, let out that anxiety. Because oftentimes situations happen, road rage specifically, because you have other things going on in your life that leads up. In other words, whatever the situation, the incident that happens, it's just the final straw, right?
So right.
Your anger is really not directed at that person. It was just a compilation of so many things that happened that led to that incident. If you have a place to vent, I'll talk about, you know, with road rage, I say, on the way to jiu-jitsu, somebody cuts you off, you want to chase them down choke the hell out of them, right? After jiu-jitsu, somebody cuts you off, like, he must have been in a hurry, not a big deal. You're just relaxed, you're calm. That's really what you want to get. I wish I could remember who said this. Maybe we'll see it in comments with this podcast, but somebody said, if you want peace, prepare for war.
That's true. I was taught that in the service.
So if you're prepared, you'll feel secure, and therefore you'll be able to confront situations in a very peaceful manner, and not have that heightened sense of aggression.
That's an excellent point. So
I think that'd be the best way to end on that topic. Yeah.
That whole thing with, you know, what's better, judo or jiu-jitsu, you know, I'm gonna have to say that it's a really non-topic. That's an argument out there between people who usually don't know what they're doing. Okay? So, anyways, we're moving on here. You know, this guy is just incredible. All right? You really are. And here's the deal.
I'm just a dude.
You got an amazing backstory how you got into jiu-jitsu. You know, and your journey through the belts in jiu-jitsu. Why don't you dial us in on that? Tell us a little bit about that. Fascinating.
Well, before I ever, you know, found jiu-jitsu or the opportunity to train, I've had a chance to look back on my life, and I think my story is actually not so much different than a lot of people that get into martial arts or get into the combat arts and such. I think a lot of us come from really tough backgrounds.
Sure. No, I do.
I came from a very dysfunctional, chaotic situation growing up. You know, I was victimized at home, and I was bullied outside of the home, and it didn't help the fact that I looked 2 to 3 years younger than everybody my age, and also didn't help that I was much smaller.
Yeah.
Right, so I was an easy target growing up as a child, and so I was always in a situation. I was always constantly having to defend myself and getting my butt whipped all the time. And I grew up in a rough area too, and I was actually minority in my neighborhood growing up, and so I was constantly having to defend myself, and you know, when you grow up in a really tough situation, there's certain parts of your brain that just don't develop, you
right.
know, and it took me a long time to realize that, you know, I didn't have confidence, I didn't have self-esteem, I didn't realize how insecure I was, I didn't realize how fragile I was until adulthood, and of course those things affect, you know, your life in general. It inhibits your ability to become successful. It inhibits your ability to grow as a man. And you know, you can do all these things on the outside. You can do a lot of things to try to boost your well-being, or for lack of a better term. But inside, you're still that terrified child that's just trying to, you know, make it through life. So I was coming off, when I was 31, I had was getting ready to go through bankruptcy. I had a small business, a marketing business that I tried to run. Of course, that business failed in hindsight because of, you know, my lack of confidence, self-esteem, and just not overall believing in myself. So I was at a very low point in my life, and I moved back to Kansas City, and I started work waiting tables to try to figure out, okay, what was my next journey in life? Where was I going to go if I, you know, coming from a sales background, what was I going to do next? And so when did you decide to actually walk into an academy and try? Well, I want to give a shout out to Corey Johnson,
Corey,
who I worked with, and we just happened to meet him at the place I worked, and he had mentioned through conversation that he had studied Jeet Kune Do and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay, all right.
And of course, growing up as a kid, I idolized Bruce Lee, of course, as I got older, though, learned through street fights, that wasn't exactly a very realistic way of fighting on the street, but I still loved it. I thought it was a great skill, and I wanted to learn it. But then when he mentioned Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it hit me, because I remember my freshman or sophomore year in college seeing the first UFC.
Yeah.
And being, smaller guy growing up, I saw this guy. Royce Gracie, of course,
Royce Gracie.
And we thought back then, and he's like, man, this dude, and it's so cliche, I hate to say it, but that was my introduction to it, and I just thought, wow, this is legit, this is real, this can actually work in real life, and I had always wanted to learn it. It's just the opportunity, and really just not seeking it out, didn't know it was available to me, and until here it was, here in Kansas City, and hey, we have it here. So I decided to go to class, met a very dear friend of mine, Sean Sharp, who got my jiu-jitsu journey started. Uh-huh. And from there, initially my attitude was, because I was insecure, right? And I'm not afraid to admit that now, but I didn't realize I'm insecure and I didn't realize how fragile I was until I started training. And so my thought process, I want to learn how to kick some ass, and so that was my initial start, and then of course I got hooked on it. I kept training. I was never interested in competing, and I don't consider myself much of a competitor to this day, and I'll get into that here in just a moment. But I fell in love, and I just kept showing up, kept getting my butt kicked over and over and over, and eventually over the years, my brain chemistry started changing.
Sure.
I started looking, my perception, the way I perceived the world around me started changing. The way my mindset was completely changed. I matured emotionally, I matured, just psychologically in general. Of course, obviously physically.
Oh, physically
became
huge.
In incredible shape. I'm at 44 years old.
Yeah.
Now I'm in better shape now than I've ever been in my entire life. And that wasn't even going back to my wrestling days in high school. So once I started to develop that, that's when I started learning, I found the true benefits. Healthy psychology, healthy emotions, being able to stay calm, being able to be in the moment.
These are all benefits of just coming in and training.
Yes.
It's incredible. It truly is. I was almost dead many months ago, and it brought me back to the brink, and it's just incredible. So I get it. So when did there's an old story about you training at Pinker Sours Academy. But you want to get into that?
As far as through Sean Sharp here in Kansas City,
he
had a master class.
Did Pinker Sours have a place here?
It was an affiliate.
We're
an affiliate. Just like we're an affiliate here of Boiler Gracie, Zabra City, of course, Major Sours up in Virginia. But no, we were an affiliate. At that time, we had at one point, we had Keith Owen as a rep, another point, we had Alan Hopkins as a rep. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But we were in the crossroads, and every now and then we get the occasional,
drunk
or messed out and knucklehead that would just come in.
There's a video of him with some guy that won the challenge, one of the Art Gracie brothers, and he took on the challenge and just totally, it's all on video on his social media.
This was an unschool opponent, but it was just a classic example of, if you have a little bit of skill, because again, I'm no, top level guy, but if you just have a little bit of skill, how easy it is to be able to
control
and an untrained person, even if that person is on drugs or whatever the case may be. But this, but
he took on an aggressor, and he was not the aggressor, but the aggressor wanted to test himself against. It's like the Gracie Challenge.
Yep.
Guy comes in, says he's this and that and this, and says he wants to test whatever. Sure. We'll tell you. You want to come on in, please. And this is an open invitation. If you're out there and you want to test a great challenge, I don't recommend it because...
Luckily, we don't really see that much anymore. No. It happened maybe, you know, a decade ago, but nowadays people are a lot more educated on the subject.
Right.
And you just don't see much of that anymore. So it's good that we don't run into that situation. We get more and more people that just, you know, if they want to train, they're not wanting to necessarily challenge. They just want to train, they want to get better, they want to do all those things. But
we want people to come and train with this. I mean, that's an open invitation. Come in. The benefits just far outweigh not doing it at all. I mean, you will absolutely love it and learn something every day when you come in.
Don't necessarily come in thinking, you know, if you don't feel like, again, I think what's important with jiu-jitsu, there's a lot of places or a lot of people that think, well, I have to be in shape or I have to be tough to do this. And for me, it's like, no, it's, you can, if you feel like you're weak, if you feel like you're cowardly and you want to fix that,
sure.
You don't want to be that person anymore.
Sure.
You know, you face your fears, you can show up, you know, at the academy, and over time, that weakness will turn to strength, and you learn how to be brave, you'll learn how to be a better person, and competitions, for example. Like I said, I'm not big on competition, I think it's important. For example, I'm doing a competition here soon, a submission challenge, and I don't go into the competitions necessarily to feel like, well, I need to win a medal, I need to represent, or this and that. For me, because I was diagnosed, didn't realize this until later in my life, but I was diagnosed through counseling with PTSD based on things that happened in the past. And of course, that was a shock to me because I thought only military, you know, could get PTSD. I didn't know that people that come from, you know, broken heart backgrounds can be in that situation. So for me, you know, I have anxiety, PTSD. I have other, you know, performance anxiety as far as panic attacks, all those things. So for me, competing, right, allows me to face those fears, you know, because even though logically when I go to a competition, I know these people at these competitions, I know that I'm not in danger, I know that it's a safe environment, I know it's just another role logically, but for some reason subconsciously, there's that trigger that happens, where my body goes into fight or flight. And the adrenaline starts kicking, the heart rate starts going, and you're thinking, man, what the heck is going on? And it's those psychological issues that just creep up unbeknownst to you, and you have no control over it. Right. So for me, competing, regardless of what happens, it's a way for me to face that, to have a chance to conquer that. And the more, and I wish that I could, you know, I wish I had the finances and the opportunity and the time to do a competition every month or every 2 months, because I believe that the more you do something that is outside your comfort zone, that is something that you're terrified of, that you need to face, the more your body, your brain starts to become comfortable in that situation. And I feel that's
actually true.
I feel probably the best competitors are the ones that compete the most, because it just, again, it becomes just like a regular training session.
It's familiar to you. You've been there before. And that's the same thing with self-defense out on the street.
Right.
You know, people get scared in the moment when, you know, in a confrontation or in a street fight, and it's not because of their doing. They've just never been in that situation before. But when you come in here and you train Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, we train you for those situations in life, difficult situations out on the street. And so when it happens to you, it's familiar to you, and you know exactly what to do. And you can end it and basically get away, survive, and be safe. That's the most important part.
Hopefully, when you train jiu-jitsu, hopefully you'll never ever be in a situation where you have to defend your family, where you have to, you know, defend yourself or, you know, defend somebody else. Hopefully, you know, what you get out of this is that you will learn how to, you know, problem solve better in life. It'll help you better in your career. It'll help you better in your relationships. It'll help you, you know, better managing yourself, you know, more discipline. So many different things that it can do. Just a quick example, I'm binge watching Billions right now, and the lead actor, and I'm having a mental lapse right now, but the main actor does private lessons with John Danaher.
Yeah,
and of course, people watching the show would have no idea who this person is, but rest jiu-jitsu junkies, we know who it is.
And, absolutely.
And it's great because Danica will impart some knowledge based on those private lessons, and then the lead character, the U.S. attorney, will then use that advice, those strategies, to then go after these criminals, these hedge fund financial criminals. And so he's using jiu-jitsu, right, throughout these episodes to win his battles, his lawsuits. Now, I don't know if other people watching the show would catch that, but
sure,
that's a perfect example of what jiu-jitsu can do for you. You're not physically fighting,
right,
but you're playing chess always in your head, and you're always trying to think several steps ahead. So if you're a business owner, if you're whatever you're doing in life, doctor, whatever intense, high-stress situation,
you got to push this back. You know, develop a strategy so you don't have to push, and you can use leverage in your favor.
Yes, and that's, I think, what jiu-jitsu ultimately does for the individual person. So at the end of the day, your biggest enemy, I think, is yourself, not the people out there. I think we oftentimes project that the world is out there, and it is really, it's us. And really, we're the issue.
I agree.
In competitions, you know, with all due respect to my competitors, I'm more fighting myself when I step on those mats than I am the other person.
Yeah, sure.
So, and I think it's important to finish up in conclusion that at the end of the day, make yourself a better person. If you want to be better in life, if you want to be more successful in life, do something like this. Find something, whether it be jiu-jitsu, whether it be something else, I don't care what it is, anything that allows you to develop a very strong, humble, but strong, healthy ego.
Sure.
And allow you to accept failure.
Absolutely.
Allow you to keep fighting once you've had that failure. So many different aspects. And of course, you can hear, I'm not the only person that said this. So many people also have shared experiences. You know, Joe Rogan, of course, always talks about the benefits. Other people we've heard. Jocko Willing also talks about the same benefits. So,
yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And so we've all had, you know, in different ways, a similar journey. So,
really interesting stuff. And I got to tell you, it's on the money. It truly is. Now, you progressing through your belts. Tell us a little bit about that. And, like, you know, really quick. Because this guy, how long have you been training?
Oh, wow.
He's been training for like over 10 years.
Yeah, off and on since 2007. And so, yeah, so my journey, I guess the best way I can say it is I just kept showing up.
There you go.
Just don't quit, really, because I was a blue belt for 7 years. I was a purple belt for 5 years. Just received this shiny new belt. It's never been about the belt for me.
Sure.
Maybe in the beginning it was, but then once I kind of learned that, I know you just show up and train, and then whatever happens, happens. I've learned that if I just keep not to sound cliche, but it's true, a white belt mentality,
sure,
just wanting to learn and wanting to get better. I just, you know, like to say, I just wear the belt they tell me to wear, right? I don't care if they say I'm a purple belt, purple, if they say I'm a brown belt. I mean, honestly, I never thought I'd ever get the purple belt.
Yeah.
Right? So just the idea that, you know, I can one day be a black belt, that's extremely humbling. It's
an achievement.
It's definitely an achievement, but, you know, it's
there.
But yeah, as far as the journey, I mean, yeah, it's off and on, you know, I was a firefighter, paramedic, I've gone through different injuries, I've had so many different things happen, but at the end of the day, what got me through it all was jiu-jitsu. It didn't matter if I only had a chance to train 3 times a month, I needed to find a place, you know, to train, and like I said, I've always been hooked on it, but at the end of the day, the only thing I'd say is, you know, just gotta find a way to keep coming. Don't make excuses. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can always find a way to train. You can always find a way to come up with the finances to do it. You know, it's just a matter of prioritizing.
If you want to do it, you'll do it. Right. If you make excuses and rationalize failure, you'll never ever get anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You can spend $100 on a date, so don't tell me that you can't spend $100 a month training.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's what it comes down to. That was my journey. All I did was kept showing up. That was it. I just didn't quit.
I hope most of you out there who are watching or processing this podcast keep showing up to your academies. And very simply, and if you haven't yet, have an academy or a group of people you train with, guess what? There's usually one within your vicinity. Just seek it out and go try them out. Look at their curriculum and things. And yeah.
If you're anywhere near the Northland, come out and see us. We're right there in north of the River Market, over on Atlantic, off of Burlington. Looking for a place to, whether it be just get in shape, again, have a place to relieve stress, learn a great skill. Doesn't matter, we have something for everybody. So yes, come check us out and treat you like family from day one.
We will. We will. We will accept you in. And we are Gracie Umida, Kansas City, is who we are. And this is our academy, this is our team and our family. And we all, this is a fantastic atmosphere, I have to say. Sean, thank you, brother. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for coming on here. And for all you guys out there, my name is Jameson Sharp, and this is
Sean Liebig.
I appreciate you guys watching, listening. Please subscribe, comment, like, and share the podcast. And that's all we got for today. And you're listening and watching the Jiu-Jitsu Takedown Podcast. And like I always say at the end of these videos, good night and good luck. And we'll see you next time. Thanks so much.